Good morning, good morning, good morning. We're glad to see you. Thanks for hanging out with Genesis this morning. What weekend? I don't know. If you hang out in Eureka, you notice, man, we even flooded down here. The creek down by the ballpark's overflowed, and what a crazy weekend. Boy, aren't you glad you're not camping this weekend? And I see Scott down here. He went, yeah. What a joy, yeah. I got some things to say about a camping trip I went on like that. Before I do that, I want to kind of give a quick plug to something. We have a resource table out there, and I know a lot of times you just kind of, as you walk in, stuff is there, and it just becomes kind of white noise. You just walk by, and it's there every week, and you don't notice it. But what we do is we want to have a place where people can buy resources, some books that we recommend that will really speak into their lives, challenge them. We got some great stuff for parents to do with their kids, and some good books on various topics about God and Jesus and those sorts of things. But we also have a stack of books. There's three different versions of this. It's a book by a guy named Mark Driscoll called A Book You Will Actually Read. You see, it's nice and thin, okay? So for those of you who like big books, I don't like, but little books would be worth it. This is a really, really good resource. There's three different versions of this, or three different books he has. This one is called On the Old Testament. There's another one we have out there. It's called On the New Testament. And a third one called On Who is God. Now, he's actually got several others of these, but these are three that we bought for our resource table. And the reason I'm bringing this up this morning is if you've been hanging out with us, we've been working through the book of Nehemiah. It's an Old Testament book. It's a story. It's a narrative that tells a story of how God builds and shapes and forms and challenges and leads his people. But, you know, sometimes we get into Old Testament texts and Old Testament stories and Old Testament things, and you're just like, man, I don't have the background, the understanding. I don't even get this. And so the tendency is to say, well, therefore, I'm just not going to deal with it. But the reason that's a little bit scary is that God has used it. You know, he has given us his word. He has spoken. He has called us to know what his word is about, what the Bible teaches. And so the question is, well, how can I go find that information out? And the cool thing about these little books is that they are just really straightforward, simple, easy to understand explanations of what the Bible is, where it came from, how it was written, the different types of literature, and how to approach different sections of the Bible in a way that, you know, you can understand it, it will make sense, and it will... You can follow it and read through it, and it'll just connect, okay? And part of the reason I'm bringing this up is that we're going to be talking about this Old Testament Hebrew festival, which my guess is most of you have never heard of, and if you have heard of it, you probably have never really, you know, other than some guy in a sermon somewhere referenced it, never really thought through what it meant. And most of my sermon is going to be trying to share and unpack this, but it's a large part of the Old Testament scriptures. And the question we always have whenever we approach a passage of scripture is, okay, I see what God is doing in the Old Testament. Here's this festival, but what does that mean for me? Here I am in 2010, hanging out in this church on a weekend, and I have to go live my life. What does this mean to me? And reading and interpreting and understanding the Bible is always applicable. But we just want to put resources in your hand to help you do that. And so this is a really cool, easy resource. So here's my challenge for you. Today as you leave or next week, don't let that table be white noise. Swing by it. Just look at some of the resources. We got like 3 or 4 copies of this book on the table. If it's one that, you know, you're like, hey, that makes sense to me, and I would read something that's that sized, grab a copy of it, okay? We can order more really easy. They are worth it. Take time to do that. And see our resource table as a place to stop by every once in a while and check things out. Personally, you know, the whole camping thing is kind of wild to me. We have our tents here, and you probably walked in and went, why do they have tents in the theater this morning? What does that mean? And we're going to explain that to you right now. But personally, the whole camping thing is kind of a weird thing. Down deep inside, I actually believe it's from the devil. Now, some of you go camping, and you have these long things that you pull behind a pickup truck. And while I love you people, that's not camping. That is just pulling a living room to the woods, okay? That's all that is. If you have your own restroom, that doesn't count. I'm just telling you, it just doesn't count. Mike Burley took Josiah and I fishing the other day, and I got kind of tickled at this guy who owns this piece of property. He bought a fifth wheel so that he could put it on his pond dam like 40 steps from his house so he had a place to go camping. I just thought that was amazing. How cool, just be walk out of your house. Some of you are like, that would be like, that is my dream. location. If I could live in a place where I could set up a camper and just camp in my backyard. To me, I'm like, you know, I couldn't do it because at 2 a.m. when I couldn't sleep, I would be headed for the, you know, the select comfort sleep number bed that I have. No way I would stay out there. You know, and sleeping on the ground, oh my gosh, I wake up in the morning and I just can't move. So I'm one of these guys, I have to have the air mattress and you know, blow it up. But we do as a family go camping sometimes. This is one of our tents. This is Josiah's tent. Somebody asked me who fits in there, and the answer is Josiah. That's it. Now, one time we went and we curled Andy up in there, I think. And it was really interesting because there were like legs hanging out and feet hanging out, you know, just everywhere. But camping is both a big challenge and a crazy event. And it can be really good for people to get together in the outdoors and all that kind of stuff. But my worst ever camping experience was with Nick Allen. Now, it's not because Nick was there, although that was a big part of it. I mean, anywhere like 3 days with Nick, everything's going to be awkward and uncomfortable, and he's just going to do weird things. And like, you always sleep with one eye open if Nick is around and all that kind of stuff. But when he was a graduating senior, he and his graduating class, what we used to do, I did youth ministry for over 20 years in churches, hung out with teenagers. And Nick was actually in my youth group. And when he graduated, we decided to take his group of graduating seniors on this you know, exciting adventure camp out. We went to Northwest Arkansas for a three-day camp out in the sticks. I mean, the whole idea is that we went to a primitive campsite, meaning that there was no electricity, and the only place where you could possibly use the restroom was a hole in the ground with a toilet seat that would give you splinters, okay? It was just like backwoods, Northwest Arkansas, which, you know, everybody walks around you is from Arkansas, which that is just uncomfortable in and of itself because, like, they only had two teeth. And so we went to this camping trip, and what happened is it ended up being a week like this weekend. It rained nonstop. Well, we had this guide. We actually went with a guide, and during the week we were going to go caving, like going to the cave and do this big cave exploration, and then we were going to do the craziest thing I had ever done, which literally was jump off an Arkansas mountain. We went rappelling, but it was one of these places where, you know, as I stood up on top of this mountain and looked down, I could see the top of these like 40-foot pine trees like 40 feet below me. It was crazy, and I'd never done anything like this. They strapped me into this thing, and, you know, I went off the side of this mountain, and, you know, I had to do it because everybody else had done it, and I am a man, and so even if I died doing it, it just had to happen. I was just about to go, and a guy looked at me and went, wait a minute. I'm like, what? He goes, never mind. Okay, when I'm about to jump off a mountain, and you go, wait a minute, never mind, that's not a good sign. And so he said the kindest thing anybody ever said to me. He looked at me and goes, well, you're a little bit top heavy. Thank you for bringing that up. I am so glad you noticed. He said, well, that's not a big deal. I was like, hey, listen, it is now a big deal, okay? Falling onto a pine tree below me is not my idea of fun. And he said, well, sometimes guys who are shaped like you, once again, you know, there went my self-esteem, If they get out of balance, they'll flip over upside down, and then if you're upside down, the harness may not hold you. I was like, that would be a problem. So he strapped me into this whole upper body harness so that I wouldn't fall out of the thing. Anyway, went off the cliff. It was a lot of fun. I actually really enjoyed it. I went about halfway down, and then I enjoyed being Superman. Man, I was, woo! It was cool. But the 3 days of the camping trip were crazy, and this guy who led the camping trip was really somebody straight out of Deliverance, okay? This dude, literally, he had this eye twitch thing. He was a little bitty scrawny dude. He had a weird kind of nose. He had this eye twitch thing, and he walked with, you know, one of these like this kind of walks everywhere he went. Like, we went hiking, and it was one of these guys where he's doing this as he's walking, but you would walk fast, and he still was right behind you. I don't know how he did that, but it was just weird. And so we're up in the woods. He has ended this primitive camping. He just kind of set up, you know, this little bitty tent, about that size, curled up in it, and that's what he did. And he told us we could either camp in tents or do a lean-to. Now, I'd never heard that word before, but now I know what a lean-to. A lean-to is when you go to a tree, and you just put a piece of cloth off that tree and sleep underneath it. And so we had this one guy who went with us who was like, I am He-Man. I'm going to do the lean-to. Well, in the middle of the night, the first night, he found his way into my tent. because it rained nonstop. 3 days nonstop rain. It was miserable. You couldn't get dry. The first night, everybody's sleeping bag was drenched. I don't care if you were in the best, most watertight, perfect tent. You were drenched. I mean, there's just no way to keep the water is coming down the side of the mountain in gushes, okay? And then right before we went to bed, the guy said, hey, we need to make sure we take the trash down to the dump and put it in a dump. I was like, oh, really? Why? Raccoons? He said, no, black bears. Wow, what have I gotten myself into? And then this guy was like, you know, I did not sleep, okay? And here's the way it works for me. This always happens when I'm camping. The first night especially, I don't sleep. I just toss, turn. It's miserable. You're too hot, then you're too cold. And there are birds over your tent. Like, they always find this spot right here and start, whippoorwill, whippoorwill. And you're just like, I will kill this bird. And I couldn't sleep. And so then you normally, just about the time the sun's coming up, you finally doze off, which is the time this guy got up and decided it was time to wake not only us, but everybody in the entire campground up with this song, this rhyme. It goes like this, okay? Three no-neck buzzards, three no-neck buzzards, three no-neck buzzards, sitting in it, and this is what he did, sitting in a dead tree. He had this little voicing. One has flown away. What a shame. And in the first morning, Nick and I just looked at each other, what the, and you can fill in the blank right there with whatever you want to, is going on. There were people 3 miles away from us who were yelling up the mountain, shut up, as he is singing this song. I'm not making a bit of this up. You can ask Nick. Everything I'm saying is dead on true. He does this whole song. He gets down to one no-neck buzzard, and then there's no-neck buzzards, and then the song changed from no-neck buzzards. One has returned. Let us rejoice. Oh, my Lord. Horrible camping trip. Needless to say, the next year we found another outfitter. We did not go back to Northwest Arkansas. But the crazy thing was, even in that experience, for those 3 days, the people that were on that trip, we really did form a bond. There was a connection. There was a closeness that was beautiful, and we really enjoyed one another. The camping trip was terrible. I didn't have one stitch of dry clothes, one stitch. I mean, we took, like, our church, 2 weeks before we went on this camping trip, had bought 15-passenger vans. This was the first trip we'd ever taken in one of these vans, and we absolutely trashed it. So I came home, the deacons were like, what have you done? The senior adults were like, we can't go in this van. It smells like Northwest Arkansas. Crazy, crazy trip. But man, there was something that happened in the experience. And those of you who've been camping know there's a closeness. Well, what's really interesting about the text that we're going to look at this morning out of Nehemiah is that God actually, in his scriptures, gave the people a national camping trip. Every year in September, early October, the end of September, early October, God gave his people a celebration, a festival that was actually a national camping trip. It was a chance for the people to come together in the city of Jerusalem, and they were to build tabernacles, tents, booths. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So, and what happens in the book of Nehemiah here is that as they are studying the law, as they open the Bible and they began to read it together, they came across in the law that it was time for this celebration, and they were obedient. They decided to do it. And so the big thing, I've got to explain this to you this morning. That'll take quite a bit of time in my sermon, as I just really explain it, because there's a lot of incredible, beautiful things that come out of this celebration. But there is a very direct connection to how God builds his people and what that means for you and me and what we as a church want to do, but also what we want to call you to do as you live out your faith as part of Genesis, if this is the place that God has called you to be. So if you have your Bible, turn to Nehemiah chapter 8. We'll look at verses 13 through 18. And if you don't have a Bible at the end of your rows, we have Bibles there for you. We'd love for you to take one of those, read along with us. We'll be on page 347 in that Bible. If you're at the end of a row, make sure you pass them down. And if you don't have a Bible at your own or you'd like to give one away, grab one of these and take them. That's our gift to you, okay? But we're going to be reading about this festival this feast. And so we'll begin with verse 13. He says, on the second day, the heads of fathers' houses of all the people with the priests and the Levites came together to Ezra, the scribe, in order to study the words of the law. Now, if you were here last week, you know that what happened just before this is that on the first day of the month, they gathered together and they asked Ezra the priest to bring the book of the law, the Old Testament, what is called the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. And for 6 to 7 hours, they did nothing but study. Ezra read the Torah, read the scriptures, and then he and the other Levites, the other leaders of God's people, preached. They had a 7-hour sermon. Okay, and if you weren't here last week, I had the voice thing like that, dude. If you weren't here last week, I would encourage you to go on our website, download, and listen to the message. They're always there. It's another resource, and I'm not saying, hey, man, you need to listen to me every week. But what we did last week is we used a scripture to explain what our philosophy of the sermon, why we stand up and preach like we preach on a weekly basis, and what that means and why that's important. And I think it's important for us to interact with that. But in the midst of this, what took place in Nehemiah is that they preached and they literally stood through the whole sermon, 7 hours, listened to everything. At the end of the sermon, their hearts were broken as they heard the law, as they heard that they are sinful people who have rebelled against their God and they need grace. Their hearts were broken, they wept, but the story ended with Nehemiah standing up and saying, but the joy of the Lord is our strength. In other words, God has entered into our story, he has given us the gospel, and we can look to God as the solution to our brokenness. He forgives, he heals, he cleanses, and we can have joy in our lives, but it is the joy of the Lord that is our strength, that is our fortress, that makes us endure. Because God has entered in. And so he tells them, go home and party. Go home and celebrate. And if there's anybody around you who doesn't have anything, invite them in. If you see poor people in the street, go barbecue. And then as you're barbecuing, invite them to join you as a sign that God has given you his grace. So you can celebrate, but you also care for people who are hurting around you. And that's the outcome of the gospel. Well, the next day, now the dads come back. The leaders of homes, the leaders of families, the dads come back. And there's a couple in this very first verse we're looking at, a couple things I want to point out to you that are things that are important to us because they really are important in the Bible. The first thing is this, the importance of dudes leading. The importance, the fact that in this story, what happens is that the next day after the 7-hour sermon, the men come back and they say, we've been so shaped, we've been so formed, we've been so challenged that we want to go on. We feel like we need to hear more and we need to go from just hearing the scriptures and having it preached to studying what the law has said because we now know we need to go back to our families and help our families understand the scriptures. We now know that we need to go back to our families and help our families grow. We know that we are responsible for this. And so what the text says is that the leaders of fathers' households and the dads, the leaders of families. Now, this does refer maybe to immediate family, but it's also to the bigger, the tribe. That in Hebrew culture, the Jewish people were part of the people of God because they were descendants of Abraham. That this dude, many years before this, heard the voice of God. God called him. He obeyed and believed God. And God took this man named Abraham and made him a great nation. And Jewish people were part of the nation. They were descendants of Abraham. Therefore, they were part of this community of faith by their family. And the families, the clans, in fact, the Hebrew people were broken into tribes and then clans and then families. And the family, this group of people that they are related by birth, but now that becomes their version of, if you want to call it, a small group. That you have this national meeting where there's 50,000 people hanging, but now you have this smaller clan, this smaller tribe of people, this family of people that is made up of maybe a couple generations of people and maybe cousins and things like that, but they are now connected with one another in the faith because they are part of this family, this nation, this people, the Hebrews, okay? Well, when we get to the New Testament, here's what's really interesting and to connect the dots that will kind of guide us through the whole sermon. When we get to the New Testament, people are not part of the family of faith by their birth. It is by what the Bible calls their new birth. In other words, you were not born into the family of God. You join the family of God when you become a follower of Jesus. You give your life to Jesus. He gives you a new heart. And as we study, especially the New Testament, what you have is all these stories of people who came from various backgrounds. Some of them are Jewish, some of them are Greek and Gentile, and they're just from all these different nations. Very few of them show up in the New Testament churches with a family that believes. And now they've become followers of Jesus. And the New Testament connection of this is the fact that in the New Testament, after Jesus has come, it is not your immediate family that draws you into the house of God that you connect to. It is your community of faith in the church. Some of you grew up in Christian homes. This idea of, you know, family, you know, dad is kind of the leader and he's the spiritual head and he has spoken into the lives of his children. And now there's a couple generations of people. And I will admit to you, that is my story. My dad and my grandpa was the first one to become a believer in Jesus. My dad and his sister were, but because they are at a very young age, their lives were being changed. My grandpa and his wife, my grandma, started going to church with my dad and his sister, my aunt. And very quickly after my dad became a follower of Jesus, so did his dad, so my grandpa. But then he started to lead his family as a Christian dad. And I've got, you know, we're now four generations into what it means to be a family of faith. But not all of you come from that. A lot of you come from backgrounds where your parents, you know, are far from God. They didn't raise you to believe in Jesus. They have different faith heritages. What happens is that God always does two things when he works in the life of an individual. First of all, he changes their heart and gives them a new relationship with himself. And so now they are transformed by the power of grace, and now they are connected to God because of Jesus and what he's done in their lives. But always, always, always in the Bible, there is also this connection to the community of faith, the people of God. Now you are relating, you are connecting, you have a tribe, a people. And all through the New Testament, the language of the Old Testament refers to tribes, clans, and families. It's connected in the New Testament with your faith tribe, your people, the people that you are doing faith and life with in the church. And so I'll just connect the dots of this whole sermon this morning. What is going on in this national camping trip is that God is giving them a place to do faith and life together with their faith family. Well, in the New Testament, we don't celebrate the festival, but the principle of do you have a place where you're doing faith and life together with your faith family? Is that happening? And if it's not, there's a disconnect between what the gospel should be doing in you and what it is doing in you, okay? And so what happens is that there is this event that the dads go, they start reading the scriptures. Look at verse 14. It says, they found it written in the law of the Lord. This is the first five books of the Bible, very specifically the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy deal with this. The law of the Lord, that they found it written in the law that the Lord had commanded Moses that the people of Israel should dwell in booths during the feast of the seventh month, and that they should proclaim it and publish it in all their towns and in Jerusalem, go out to the hills, bring branches of olive, wild olive, myrtle, palms, and other leafy trees to make booths as it is written. Now, you're probably going, why is he throwing that booths? And here's what happened, okay? As I was sitting in our creative team, and for the rest of this sermon, it is going to be called the Feast of Tabernacles. Because as we were sitting creative team, I said the whole sermon, the whole message this week is about the Feast of Booths. And they thought I was talking about some weird Hebrew burlesque show. So we were like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, that's okay. Some of you are just now starting to pick up what's going on. Because every time I would say booths, and I'm saying that very clearly, booths. My wife was making fun of me last night the way I was saying it. I was like, but I got to say it this way because I don't want anybody to hear me say that and think I'm saying something else. They heard something entirely differently. People in creative team was hearing something, and they're like, Feast of what? So the Feast of Tabernacles, they read in the scriptures that the Feast of Tabernacles, which is one of the other names in the scripture for it, the Feast of Tabernacles, they read in the Old Testament in the scriptures that they were supposed to celebrate this. And so for us to understand what's going on here, we need to read that too. So in the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, verses 33 through 43, this is God giving the commandment to have this celebration. It says, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, see, there you go. They said, they looked and they saw that God had commanded the people through Moses. Well, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the people of Israel saying, on the 15th day of this seventh month and for 7 days is the Feast of Booths to the Lord. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. For 7 days you shall present food offerings to the Lord, and on the eighth day you shall hold a holy convocation and present a food offering to the Lord. It is a solemn assembly. You shall not do any ordinary work. These are the appointed feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim as times of holy convocation for presenting to the Lord food offerings, burnt offerings, and grain offerings, sacrifices and drink offerings, each on its proper day. Besides the Lord's Sabbath, and besides your gifts, and besides all your vow offerings, and besides all your free will offerings, which you give to the Lord. On the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the produce of the land, you shall celebrate the feast of the Lord 7 days. And on the first day shall be a solemn rest, and on the eighth day shall be a solemn rest. And you shall take on the first day the fruit of the splendid trees, branches of palm trees and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. You shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days of the year. It is a statute forever throughout all your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the people of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. All right, so you just read the text with me. Let me explain this festival, the Festival of Tabernacles, and why God gave them not just this, but several celebrations. And there were specifically three celebrations, three festivals that were called the pilgrimage festivals that all of the Jewish people were supposed to celebrate every year. And these pilgrimage festivals always, they did two things very clearly for the people, is they would all, the idea is that they were all supposed to come to Jerusalem and celebrate together. And the first thing is it would remind them of their heritage. They would look back and see the story of God's deliverance from Egypt in the story of the Exodus, where they were slaves in Egypt, but God delivered them through the hand of this guy, Moses, and delivered them out of slavery to himself. And each of the festivals retold a little bit of that story, because it is that story that bound them together as a people. God had saved them from slavery and brought them to himself, and that's why their nation was what it was. But the second thing that God always did with this is that God always used it also to retell the story annually in the giving of their produce, their fruits and their grains and things, and reminded them that they were dependent on God to eat and survive year in and year out. So there was always in all these festivals both a looking, you know, a dealing with the past, but also a looking at how God had blessed them in the present. And there's several things that happen even in this passage that are beautiful, because it's not just that God called them in the Feast of Tabernacles to a camping trip. It's also the question of who are they camping with, okay? So look at this. The first thing in the text, it talks about all these offerings, okay? And I won't go into all of them, but there were all kinds of different types of sacrifices and offerings and things that they were supposed to bring. But the main two offerings, the main two sacrifices that they were supposed to bring to the temple to make were called burnt offerings and food offerings. A burnt offering was always to deal with your sin. When you would bring in the Old Testament an offering that was a burnt offering, They would slaughter an animal, but before they would take the life of the animal, they would lay hands on the animal, and the laying of the hands on the animal was a, it was called transference. You would lay hands on the animal, and basically what was going on is that the person whom the sacrifice was being made for should have been going, this ought to be me. This animal is about to get what I really deserve. My sin is wicked, and for forgiveness to take place with the holiness of God, the wages of sin is death, but this animal is paying the price in my place. It's always a picture looking forward to the fact that Jesus would be the ultimate sacrifice. And those are called burnt offerings. They would then take the animal and they would put it on the altar and they would consume the animal in a fire. And there were all these rituals that went with it, but they consumed basically the entire animal. But then there was a second type of offering called a food offering. And in a food offering, it was different. They would take an animal and they would slaughter it as well, but then they would take parts of the animal and they would place it on the altar and consume it, but then they would go eat the rest of the animal, which is kind of weird because you're like coming and doing a sacrifice and then you get to go have barbecue. And you're like, yes, barbecue beef, you know, that is amazing. Now, it wasn't pork, so it was, what was it? Kansas City barbecue. Not Memphis barbecue, but they were gonna enjoy the celebration of eating part of what they celebrate. But you get it, there is a massive picture here. Because what God was inviting them to do in the food offerings was to bring their best, but when they brought their best to God, he was inviting them to dinner with him. The invitation of a food offering is that they are going to dine with God as their friend. They're gonna have a camp out with God. And the whole festival of booths, they are going to come together in this celebration where they are with their people. But God is also inviting them to Jerusalem to do this. They are camping with their creator. And so the invitation of this festival is this invitation to be close to God and close to each other as you do the things that are camping. And so they would go, you know, and, you know, a lean-to was even good for these people. They were going to go get palm branches and different trees and just bring them and just kind of prop them up in Jerusalem. Now, this was generally at the drier time of year, so they didn't have to fear this week-long, you know, rain like, you know, some camping trips that we'd go on. But their shelter was just some sticks and some branches and some leaves, and they were just going to hang out under this, and they were going to do this for a week, but they were going to do this in community as they celebrated this camping trip. And, you know, basically what's taking place now is that everybody's commanded to come do this. Now, we're going to find out in the text that for a long, long time, this celebration had been celebrated, but not everybody had been coming. But God had commanded them they're supposed to do this. And so what happens in the text is that they're opening the scriptures, and as they open the scriptures, they come across this story, and they go, we're supposed to do this. We are supposed to come to Jerusalem, all of us, all together on this date, and we're supposed to lay aside what we have on our calendars and our busy schedules. We're supposed to go build these deals, and we're going to hang out, and we're going to dwell in these little tents, these tabernacles made out of trees, and that's what we're supposed to do. So they went all around the country. They began to hang up these signs and all this kind of stuff because they were supposed to do this. And so what I want to do just real quick is I want to talk to you about what took place as they celebrated this festival, because there's some things as they celebrated the festival they were to do together with their faith tribe, with their people. And I think the things that happen in this story as we understand this festival are the very same things that ought to be happening with us as we hang out with a faith tribe, as we have a people and we're doing faith and life together. These things ought to be part of what's going on. All right, so here's just three things real quick that take place when the Festival of Tabernacles or Festival of Booths was happening. It was God's way of giving the community of faith a place to, first of all, look back. It was a place to look back. And really what's going on here is that the people are retelling their story as a people. Now, very specifically, in this festival, the part of the story they're going to retell is the story of them wandering in the wilderness. So let me explain. What happens for the Hebrew people is that God delivers them from slavery. It is a miracle. And if you're not familiar with the story, it's in the book of Exodus. But what basically takes place is that God sends 10 plagues to the Egyptians through the hand of Moses and basically proves he is God and these people are his people. And he delivers them from slavery supernaturally. It is one of the big, giant stories of the Bible. And the people cross the Red Sea. I mean, God literally parts the sea and they cross on dry ground. He provides and he delivers and he saves the people from this nation from slavery. And then he brings them to himself, and on the top of this mountain in the Middle East, God's people come together and God speaks to his people and he enters in what's called a covenant, which is a promise that I will be your God, you will be my people, and I will bless you and care for you as long as you trust me and obey me. And so they enter into a covenant. Well, what happens very quickly is God is faithful, they are faithless. And through a series of events, what eventually takes place is that God, instead of taking them directly to Israel, which is the land he had promised he was going to give them a place as part of his blessing. Instead of doing that, now they wander for 39 years in their own unfaithfulness, their own disobedience. And the story is showing us, the beauty of the story of this wandering is that even though they are faithless, God still loves them, cares for them, and woos them like a husband does his betrothed. He calls them. He just keeps caring for them, even though they have wandering eyes, and keeps drawing them back to himself. And there's a 39-year period where they're just wandering in the wilderness, but it's not just random. God is building into their hearts what they need to know him, and he cares for them. They are faithless. He is faithful. And so this festival, they build all these booths to remember this season of their people's life. They're looking back into their story, remembering a time where their lives were hard because they were faithless, but God was faithful. But then even with the harvest, they're looking back and they're remembering the spring when, man, oh God, please let it rain. If it doesn't rain today, and then all of a sudden it rains like it has this weekend, God, please make it stop. You know, and they're realizing that they are dependent on God, but now the harvest has happened and they're looking back on this, realizing that there was a time where their lives were in turmoil, their lives were there was fear of whether they would have food, whether they would have provision, but they trusted in God. This is the idea. And that in the middle of that, God was faithful and they're looking back. And the reason this is so important is because in any people of God, there are people who are in the middle of that. There are people who are wandering in the wilderness. There are people who are struggling with their own brokenness and their own sin, or they're at a place where they don't know what's going to happen. And they need a people around them who will wrap their arms around them and say, keep believing, trust God, hold on. I was with a woman this week as she came to me and she said, listen, I need you to pray for me and I need some advice. Here's my story. 5 years ago, my husband molested my girls. And he's getting out of prison this week. What do I do? How do you answer that question? The answer is you don't. But I lovingly told her, do you have a people? Do you have somebody? Because right now you are in the wilderness. Do you have a people who can look back with you, put their arms around you, hold you, and say, believe, hold on? Because what she kept saying is, my prayers, I just can't pray because I'm going, how can this man get free? Why didn't God answer our prayers and say, no, leave him there? She's afraid, nervous. How do you deal with those things in life? And the answer is you've got to have a people. You have to have a tribe. If you don't have a tribe and those times show up, if all you do is just come hang out in church and church is just an event, when those times show up, there isn't an answer. And this festival was a time for them to look back and go, our story includes this wandering. We're going to remember that. Our story includes that in the spring, we didn't know if rain was going to come. We're going to remember that. They're going to look back. But it's also a time for them to look around. Because what they do is they bring all their fruit. They bring all their produce. They bring all their, their cows and some of their lambs and some of the, you know, what they can eat with them. And now Jerusalem is filled with, you know, people who have these tents and lean-tos and these booths, these tabernacles, but now all their food. But all that represents the fact that when they, in the fall or in the spring, when they were hoping that God would be faithful and send the rains, now here they are in the fall and God has been faithful. And what this really is, the Feast of Tabernacles is their version of Thanksgiving. It is their version of Thanksgiving as they go, God has been good. God has been good to us. And they look around and they see this. And as they retell their story, they also realize that those people wandered in the wilderness, but eventually God brought them into the promised land. And for these people, now that story has been told twice. Because remember, the story of Nehemiah is all about the fact that then, hundreds of years later, they were exiled again. They were taken from Israel, but now they're back. And now these people, when they celebrate this festival, are looking around at Jerusalem and God has been faithful again. And they're looking around. It's a chance to celebrate what God has done. And, you know, anytime you need community, you and I need community because we need to be able to look around at each other, sit around in our community group and talk and go, look at what God's doing in our lives. You start doing a prayer chart and you begin to see that, man, God answered this prayer and this prayer. It's amazing what God is doing. If you don't have a faith tribe, if you don't have a people you're doing life with, you just don't have a place to really look around and see the blessings of God in community. And the third thing that happens here is that God is giving them a chance to look ahead, to see God's faithfulness, that all the stuff that he's doing now holds a promise of what is to come. Because even though they had entered the promised land, there are in the Bible all these promises of this ultimate promised land and this ultimate deliverer and this ultimate one. And so part of what they did in the Feast of Booths is at the end of the week, they would hold the celebration where they would pour out water. They would literally take some water and they would pour it out, and the people would gather and they would pray and cry out to God going, okay, God, you got to do it again. We are going to be thirsty. This ground is going to be thirsty again. And there was this image-driven pouring out of water as part of this gathering, so that as they did this, they literally were saying, we have to depend on you. There's going to be a point where we are thirsty, where we are needy, where we have to depend on you again. And God, the cycle starts again. Be faithful. We will be thirsty. This land will be thirsty. Be faithful. And part of this is because in the growing cycle of the Hebrew crops, they did a lot of fall planting. This is the dry time, but really quick after that is the fall rains, what the Bible calls the latter rains, that would come in the later fall that would soak the ground so that these plants, like wheat, if you know a lot about wheat, you plant it in the fall, and you need some fall rain so that wheat has a way to grow. This is one of their big crops. They were praying for the latter rains. And so there's this pouring out of water just saying, God, we're dependent. Send the rain, okay? But there's this looking forward to that God will be faithful. But in their big story, the promised land was just a picture of the greater thing, that God was going to deal with their deeper issues, deeper needs, their deeper thirst in a different way. And there's a very, very interesting story in the life of Jesus. John chapter 7, he is hanging out at the Feast of Booths. And he is at this celebration. It says, on the last day of the feast, a great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Now this he said about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive, for as yet the Spirit had not been given because Jesus was not yet glorified. In other words, Jesus is using this imagery to say, you know the picture of the rain, the water, you're crying out for God to soak your soul, to soak your lives, the image of that. I am the fulfillment of that. If anybody's thirsty, as they're pouring out this water's image, Jesus stands up in the middle of this festival and he cries out, I'm the answer to your thirst. And if you come to me, I'm going to give you a river on the inside where you don't have to seek for water or pour out water anymore. The thirst for your soul will be filled with the glory of the Spirit in your life. It's an amazing picture. And there's always this looking forward to say, listen, we stand here today. We need God. We're looking to him. But Jesus is the answer to this. But also the hope that one day the ultimate promised land has been promised to us, okay? And so this festival was designed for this, for them to do with their people and with their God, this celebration of looking back, looking around, looking ahead. And so look what happens in the text here. It goes on to say, chapter 8, verse 16. So the people went out and brought them and made booths for themselves, each on his roof and their courts and the courts of the house of God and the square and the water gate and the square at the gate of Ephraim. And in other words, everywhere you turned in Jerusalem, there were tents. There were these dwelling places where people were hanging out and camping. And all the animals and all the fruit and all the produce, it's all there in Jerusalem. And they did it. They obeyed the voice of the Lord, the word of God, and they came together and they did it. And all the assembly of those who had returned from the captivity made booths and lived in booths. It says, everybody came. Everybody, this 50,000 people, everybody came to Jerusalem for 7 days. They put aside what was going on in their lives to hang out with the people of God. For from the days of Joshua, it says Jeshua, the son of Nun, to that day, the people of Israel had not done so. And there was very great rejoicing. Now, here's what he means by this. Joshua is the leader of God's people right after Moses. He is the one who actually led them into Israel, the promised land. Moses dies. Joshua is the next leader after the story of them being in the wilderness. And when Joshua celebrates, everybody comes. Well, since then, they had celebrated the festival of booths. But this is what happened. People said, well, I can't make it this year. My kid's got a soccer tournament. I can't make it this year. I got work overload and I just can't get there. I can't make it this year. You know, I got tickets to go see, you know, the Rams play. Well, maybe you would come with that. Although maybe now with the draft, you'd go, hey, anyway. I can't make it because my kids have too much homework. I can't. And people just kind of, the festival went on. People in large part didn't come because life had taken over. It's what he's saying here is for the first time since Joshua, everybody said, this is important. We're going to be there. We're going to show up. We're going to be part of this. And so they came. And it goes on to say in this, it says, verse 18, and day by day from the first day to the last, he read from the book of the law of God, and they kept the feast 7 days, and on the eighth day there was a solemn assembly according to the rule. In other words, they did what the commandment of God had said to do. They went and they had a national camp out where they camped with God and with the people of God, and they did community life. So I've already kind of laid the foundation. What's the connect the dots for us? Because we don't celebrate this festival, but the ideas are still important. So what's the connect the dots? And it's just this. It is so important for us to have a people, a faith tribe. And there is pressure, just like all those years of the Hebrew people, that we're too busy. There is too much in our life. There's too much going on. Our kids have too much stuff. There's too much homework. My job is too busy. All this stuff that tends to push us away. But the call of God in our lives is that we have to have this. This is where God shapes and molds and forms our faith, as we find a group of people that we look back into what he's done in the dry times. We look around and we see the work of God in our lives, and we look forward to what he's promised he will do. And we do this proclaiming this together. Now at Genesis, you know, there's in the Bible, there's principles, methods. The principle here is that you need a people. For them, the method was this festival. For us, our method is what we call community groups. We do these groups where people hang out. They meet, most of them, once a week, and they hang out, and they pray together, and they talk about the sermon, but they talk about what God's doing in their lives, and they do mission together. And what happens is, you know, if you stay with a community group for a season of life, you will find that you have a faith family. Now, you can't show up once and then skip 2 weeks and then show up and then, like, you got to stay in there. You got to have somebody in that group that annoys you. Just, it's necessary. And if you don't have anybody if you're in a community group, or you don't have somebody that annoys you, you're it. But you need a people that you are doing faith and life with. You need a place in your spiritual life where you are regularly camping with a group of people. Our method is community groups. That doesn't mean that's the way you have to do it, but if you're part of this church, it's a good place to start. We have like 5 community groups going on. Those community groups, I thought about doing this big at the end. Here's a sign up. Here's the deal. Those community groups will hit summer schedules and they'll kind of wind down and they'll meet, but it won't be as busy. But here's a thought for you. If you're not in a community group yet, you got about 5 or 6 weeks to kind of get plugged in before summer happens. And so if you're not in a community group and you'd like to figure out where they are and what's going on, come see me and I'll talk to you about those groups and I'll point you in directions of, you know, what night works and where you live and all that kind of stuff, so you can maybe think about for the next few weeks, I'm going to go hang out in a group just so I start getting plugged in and prime the pump so that in the fall, isn't that funny how it's the same time? When we're back in school and out of the craziness of summer, I've already got a people that I'm starting to forge my life with, okay? You have to have this. If you don't have a faith tribe, the gospel is not completely connecting in your life. It is so important, and I just want to encourage you, find that faith tribe. Go camping. Be part of a people of God where you go through days where it's beautiful and the campfire starts, and you go through days where it rains all night and you can't find dry wood, but you're doing that with a people and developing closeness with them, okay? That's the challenge. That's the festival, Tabernacles. Hopefully you're leaving here going, I never even knew what that was for. That makes sense, but now I see where that connects to me too, okay? I'm gonna pray, the band's gonna come out here, and we're gonna celebrate Jesus. You know why? Because he is the one who fills the thirst in our soul. He is the one we look to. He is the one we celebrate, and he is the God who invites us to go camping with him. He loves us, he cares for us, and he gave his life for us. We're gonna celebrate Jesus. Lord, we love you, we praise you, and we just sing to you today. Just open our eyes to the greatness of your grace and the need to have a faith tribe. In your name I pray. Amen.